And now we are delighted to have with us Zafar Bengash. Are you there, Zafar?
Hello, Phil. Yes, I am.
Zafar, we have a new royal family shakeup in Saudi Arabia. You were explaining to us, I think, the last time we talked about these people. They are bombing Yemen as we speak.
Yes.
They're using weapons called cluster bombs, which are illegal, according
right.
to, you know, international opinion. I don't know.
Yes.
I know the Americans didn't sign that agreement. Do you
right.
find, let me link two stories. Do you find it rather interesting that America is sniffing around, seeing if they can find whether or not the president of Syria might have used an illegal weapon when they are supplying illegal weapons to Saudi Arabia?
This is the irony of this whole situation. In fact, when Pentagon officials were asked as to whether they are going to consider not supplying cluster bombs to Saudi Arabia, and the officials said, no, we are not even considering that possibility because we have an agreement with them and we are supplying them because we know that they are only using them on military targets. Now, the reality in Yemen is that they have the Saudis have killed more than 2,600 civilians since they started their bombing campaign on March 26th. Mm-hmm. They have destroyed virtually the whole of Yemen's infrastructure, including bridges. They've even bombed hospitals, schools, of course, you know, a few refineries that they have and power generation plants. Yemen's main airport in Sana'a was bombed 2 days ago because an Iranian humanitarian plane was on its way to Yemen to deliver humanitarian aid, and the Saudis bombed the runway so that the plane could not land over there.
Hmm.
And they've been using cluster bombs. This has even been confirmed by the United Nations now. And yet the Americans are just totally unconcerned about this. And as you said, they are sniffing around for any possible use of illegal weapons by the government of Syria.
Yeah,
which
as a pretext for war, by the way. I mean,
Exactly. In fact, according to my information, it's not the Syrian government that has used it. I mean, there it's an allegation. In Yemen, mm-hmm. there is no allegation. It's a fact. And yet they say, you're still going to continue to supply these cluster bombs, etc., to the Saudis. So this is the kind of, you know, very strange situation that we find ourselves in.
Mm-hmm. And incidentally, I think you said they provided the rationalization that they promised to use them only on military. But that isn't how the law, the international law is. Under international law, you're not to use them at all, right?
That's correct, yes. Cluster bombs are, of course, you know, they are...
It's a banned weapon.
Banned weapons, and they don't discriminate between anybody. They just sort of, you know, destroy everything in their range.
They're designed not to discriminate, that part.
That's correct. Exactly, yes. Exactly, yes.
Well,
but, I mean, you also mentioned with respect to this shake-up in the leadership. Now, mm-hmm. this is absolutely incredible and unprecedented in Saudi history. You know, Bruce Rydell, who's a former CIA analyst, he worked there for 30 years or so, he had an op-ed piece in Al Jazeera 2 days ago, and he made an interesting observation. He said that the changes that have occurred in Saudi Arabia in the last 100 days did not occur at this speed in the last virtually 100 years. And this is very interesting because what this current king has done is not only launched this war in on Yemen on a totally false pretext, but that both he and his son, his young son, who's only about 34, 35 years of age, whom he appointed as a defense minister, and 2-3 days ago he declared that the crown prince has been dismissed. The crown prince remained on his post, Prince Mukrin, remained on his post only for about 16 months. He was appointed by the previous king, the ex-king who passed away on January 23rd, King Abdullah. Now, one thing that we need to note is that Prince Mukrin, who was, of course, the last or the youngest son of the founder of the Saudi kingdom. Mukrin is about 70 years old. But what is interesting about him is that his mother is Yemeni. And it seems to me that these other Saudis have some kind of a grudge against Yemenis, because according to our information, literally thousands of Yemenis have been arrested in Saudi Arabia. And because Prince Mukrin's mother is from Yemen, he has also been dismissed from his position as crown prince as well as deputy prime minister.
they don't practice any subtlety there, do they?
Absolutely, yes, yes. And, of course, you know, the deputy crown prince, who's Prince Mohammed bin Naif, who served as interior minister, he continues to serve as interior minister, but he has been elevated to the position of crown prince. And the king has appointed his own son, Mohammed bin Salman, who is the defense minister as well, but he's also made him deputy crown prince, so to make sure that after Mohammed bin Naif, that his son would become the king of Saudi Arabia. Now, there is a point that I think your listeners should perhaps note, the fact that Salman has launched this war on Yemen, and his son is primarily responsible for conducting this war. So basically, it is Salman and his son that own this war. Mm-hmm. And its consequences are going to be absolutely horrendous for these two people, because the way the war is going on, although they've caused a lot of civilian casualties, they've destroyed much of the infrastructure, but they have not been able to dislodge the fighters that have challenged the illegitimate government in Yemen, which was supposed to be headed by Abdurrabbu Mansur Hadi, who is now a fugitive in Saudi Arabia. And he still claims that he is the legitimate president of Yemen, when in fact he had resigned on January the 15th. He had resigned and then of this year, and then he was placed under house arrest, and then he fled the capital city on May 21st, and he went to the southern port city of Aden, from where he fled the country on March 25th. So I'm not quite sure what this so-called legitimate president is up to, because he had resigned, and then he said, no, I've withdrawn my resignation. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how this happened.
That apparently is a fine by the British and Americans and the Saudis.
That's correct, yes, yes.
So that makes you legitimate. You have friends who say, he's legitimate.
That's correct, yes. So that's how
who
determines. That's correct, yes. Exactly, exactly.
Leadership, something curious happened. There was a ceasefire for a moment. What the heck was that?
Yes.
Didn't they declare a victory or something?
That's correct. On April 21st.
And they called off the victory?
That's correct. Well, they probably couldn't find enough people.
Couldn't resist a chance to lose.
That's good. For a victory celebration, perhaps. They announced that we are calling off our bombing campaign. That was on April 21st, and they said that we have achieved all of our objectives. And if I recall correctly, when they launched the war, they said that one of our objectives is to install the so-called legitimate president back in power, and they demanded that revolutionary forces, the Houthis, should not only withdraw from all of the areas apart from their own area, which is in the north, the place called Saada province, that they should confine themselves to that province, and that they should surrender all of their weapons to the government of Yemen. Now, I'm not quite sure which government they're talking about, because the Yemeni government does not exist and the president is not there. So according to my understanding of what the Saudis had initially announced, that they demanded that the Houthi forces surrender their weapons. They have not done that. They demanded that they pull out from all of the cities and provinces that they are operating in and return to their own province in the north. They haven't done that. And most critically and most importantly, the so-called legitimate president has not been installed in power. Uh-huh. So I'm not quite sure exactly what the Saudis meant when they announced on April 21st that they have achieved their objective.
They got everything they wanted. They must have meant that they'd written it down somewhere, what they wanted.
They probably forgot.
They were celebrating that they'd got their 4 points written out. But
that's correct.
They forgot that the other guy has to agree to them.
Yeah, the only problem is that most of the Saudis, or at least the rulers, are completely illiterate, so they don't know what's going on.
There is a lot of illiteracy, isn't there? In the royal family, I'm told, I read authoritative voices who say that they're not terribly bright.
No, of course
not. They emphasize a lot of study on
sure. I want to mention something to you. See, these are the kinds of things that go on over there. Like, you know, none of these people, whether it's the current King Salman or his predecessor Abdullah, etc., they were not educated anywhere. And in fact, even the crown prince now, and the deputy crown, the current crown prince, the new one, Mohammed bin Naif, he came to the U.S. to study in Oregon State in the U.S., but he never completed his studies. They're so dull, so dense that they just can't go through even a normal course of study. So he had to go back without completing any of his, formal studies. And the other thing that I want to mention to you is that, you know, some of the things that happen not only in Saudi Arabia but the surrounding countries. In August of 2014, there is an Islamic university, the so-called Islamic university in Medina. Now, Medina is, of course, a very, very important city for the Muslims because that's where the Prophet established, the first mosque in that city, and that became the seat of power and the capital of the first Islamic state. There is what the Saudis have established, and they call it the Islamic University of Medina, and of course they train various, preachers and so on. In August of 2014, that university conferred an honorary doctorate degree on King Abdullah in political science. Now, the irony of it is that at the Islamic University in Medina, there is no such faculty called political science.
He's the first.
So I'm not quite sure which faculty conferred that honorary doctorate on him. But these are the kinds of, idiotic things that these people indulge in, and they think that the rest of the world should accept their nonsense. Yeah.
Before we move to another point, I want to mention that the Western press is saying that this present leadership is more conservative than the previous, that people talking about reform, they say actually they're going the other direction.
Yes.
They removed the only woman they had. They appointed a woman, and they removed her.
That's correct. She was the deputy minister in charge of women's affairs, and that woman was encouraging education for women. The previous king was considered to be some kind of a moderate, although in January of 2014, he issued a decree in which he said that anybody who calls for reforms in the kingdom, that's political reforms, or exposes corruption inside the kingdom, would be considered to be guilty of terrorism and therefore can be sent to prison for anything from 3 to 10 years. And there are at the present time at least 40,000 political prisoners in Saudi Arabia. Unfortunately, this fact is not talked about much, despite the fact that Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and a number of other organizations.
I think talking about it is probably terrorism.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
According to our Prime Minister and the President of the United States.
Yeah, this would
because you're running down confidence in the Saudi royal family, which is.
That's right, yes.
It's a sine qua non of terror.
Yeah. Yes, and in fact, there are other things about Saudi Arabia. A lot of people have this image of Saudi Arabia as a country awash in petrodollars. While it earns about $300 billion a year in oil revenues, there are, according to Saudi economists, Unemployment runs at anything from 30 to 40% in Saudi Arabia. And the other Saudi economists have documented, these are not official, you know, documents, because the Saudi government, you know, maintains no statistics whatsoever about poverty levels, unemployment levels, or people, you know, without other mm-hmm. services. Saudi economists who have done studies and reports, etc., they say that 60% of their population, that's the Saudi population, I'm not talking about the yes. the foreign workers that are in Saudi Arabia, because they are treated worse than slaves, but it's mm-hmm. the actual Saudi citizens holding Saudi passports, 60% of them cannot afford a house. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that means that, you know, you have these vast disparities. On the one hand, you have the royal family that takes in $300 billion and uses it for whatever it thinks it has the right to do. Nobody has any right whatsoever to ask any questions. And then you have these massive poverty and unemployment levels and people that cannot even afford to own a house. Yeah. So these are the kinds of disparities that we find over there.
So it's the royal family that is awash in petrodollars, but the rest.
That's correct.
And I think you told us previously that there's about 4,000 of them.
7,000 of them.
7,000.
That's correct, yes.
They're awash.
The founding king, Abdulaziz, now this is something that I've never really been able to figure out how he managed to do that. He had 23 wives. And out of those 23 wives, he produced 46 sons and I think 15 daughters, or if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Out of those 46 sons, 35 survived because the others died at a young age. And I'm sort of, you know, wondering exactly what this man was doing. I mean, he must have been very active at night to be able to produce that many children. So he was, during the day, he was involved in raiding caravans, etc., so that he could plunder caravans and grab some wealth. And at night, he was just, you know, involved in producing children. And it's the result of that sort of, you know, his nocturnal activities that we have today. This marvelous collection of people, absolutely.
Yeah. This is Zafar Ben-Gesh. By the way, it's crescent-online.net. There is a couple of things I want to make sure I get the matter with the Syrian war.
Right.
We've had reports, they're quite confusing. There has been some success on the part of the Syrian army against this grouping, which is the main name we all know now is ISIS. And
yes.
What is your sense of the progress? There's been a town near an important one, they say, near the border with Turkey. What's transpiring there in your view?
Yes, I think what is happening is that Turkey continues to facilitate the infiltration of mercenaries from all over the world through its border into Syria, and of course they are given weapons as well. In the border region, obviously, the Syrian government does not have a very firm control, because what they did was they made a strategic decision that they're going to withdraw their armed forces to certain strategic areas to be able to defend those, and they allowed other groups that were aligned with the Syrian government, whether it was the Kurds or other groups whose own militias could control the border region. And of course, this area, Idlib, as it's the name is, that in that area, these ISIS or Daesh terrorists have made some gains. But you know, these things in the border region, they keep on changing hands fairly frequently. What is important to understand is that cities like, you know, the capital city, Damascus, is firmly under the control of government forces, as is Homs, which is another important city. a number of other places, Aleppo, etc. Although, you know, in Aleppo, certain areas are under the control of these terrorist groups. But in the border region, the situation is rather fluid. It keeps on changing depending on whether the government is able to help these various militias to keep control, or if not, then obviously these terrorist groups take control and fighting continues. So on the border regions of Syria, definitely there is a certain amount of retrenchment of the Syrian government or its allied forces.
Mm-hmm. And it really this waxing and waning near the border has to do fundamentally with Turkey's support. It's not open support, but it is basically open support. By the way, a Foreign Policy magazine today mentioned the name of a two-star American general, and they say it's his job to supply these fighters. And, of course, he's working through Turkey. Again, it's like the beginning of our interview. It's right there in front of us. They're nakedly trying to bring down the Syrian government, while meanwhile saying, no, we're not. I mean, even though everything is how can you name the two-star general whose job it is?
Yes, exactly. Well, you see, you know, they keep on saying that, you know, we are not trying to bring down the Syrian government except that we have a two-star general who's supplying their weapons, that's all, you know.
Yes.
So, and of course, you know, Turkey is a member of NATO, and it is inconceivable that Turkey would be doing anything without, NATO approval or NATO coordination. So this is definitely a formal policy that is being pursued. And in fact, there was an article 2 days ago in one of the Palestinian magazines in which they said that the Saudis might even get involved directly in Syria after their Yemen experience. That after their bombing campaign in Yemen, that they might start a similar bombing campaign in Syria, because that's what the Syrian terrorist groups have been asking for. Now, that would be interesting because, on the one hand, the Saudi regime claims that it is opposed to these terrorists, and on the other hand, they are even contemplating launching a bombing campaign in Syria.
Well, again, many people think they're there, right? I mean, there was at least one pilot. I remember they made sure it was a woman who, when they first started bombing Syria, they had a photograph taken of a woman from the Gulf states, I think, one of them.
Yes.
But somehow or another, of course, they have been. They got everything but fingerprints, I guess, involved.
Yes, you see, what they do is that those operations they carry out under the pretext that they are bombing these terrorist groups and not Syrian government forces. Mm-hmm. But now the information is that they think that they might even start attacking Syrian government forces.
But if that were to occur, I mean, that would be likely to set off some odd movement in the region. It'd be rather like an earthquake, right? I mean, there would be some states that would say, no, don't do that.
Yes, of course.
You could end up a state-to-state contest.
Exactly. And I think if the Saudis were to make that mistake, which I think they have already made in Yemen, because mm-hmm. what's happening, the consequences of what they've done in Yemen is that, number one, they have not been able to defeat the Houthis. Number two, they've actually strengthened Al-Qaeda and ISIS type of terrorist groups inside Yemen. Mm-hmm. And then they keep on saying that, no, we are opposed to them. Well, if you are opposed to them, how come you are actually pursuing policies that are strengthening their hands? And now they're contemplating the same thing in Syria. Mm-hmm. I also want to mention one other point, and that is that I've been informed that there is going to be a humanitarian ship carrying humanitarian items, food and other items for the people of Yemen, leaving from Iran on Friday, this coming Friday. Mm-hmm. And a number of, you know, international peace activists have been invited to join that ship.
To take
humanitarian aid to the people of Yemen. Because, you know, as I mentioned 2-3 years ago, an Iranian plane was unable to land in Sana'a because the Saudis bombed the runway, so the plane had to return. Mm-hmm. So now the Iranians are planning to send a ship full of, you know, food and medicines, etc., And I also have been provided information that in Yemen itself, of course, it's a society that's divided among different groups, etc. Mm-hmm. In those hospitals that are controlled by pro-Saudi elements, they are refusing to treat Houthis because they consider them to be their enemies. Mm. So this is a clear violation of the medical ethics and profession that when injured people come to you, that you turn them away because yes. you disagree with their political views or whatever. Yes. So these are some of the things that are happening over there currently.
That's very important. We're speaking to Safar Bengash, crescent-online.net, and in the final minutes, I want to make sure to ask you about this. The Christian Science Monitor has published a rather informative piece. They go after the U.S. Discussion of the war in Yemen, and they say almost all American media use the term when they speak of the those who overthrew or removed this illegal government, this Mr. Hadi. They say they always use the phrase pro-Iran and Shiite, so as to get the reader kind of framed in
In a negative, but in
fact, the Christian Science Monitor says those terms are not accurate. They're not the same school of Shia Islam as Iran. And in terms of what they want, it to say they're pro-Iran is completely to miss the point. You want to talk? Could you talk about that?
Absolutely. You see, the Houthis are Zaydis who are not the same as the Shias in Iran, number one. Secondly, the Houthis are very good fighters. They are sort of virtually born with a gun in hand. And today in Yemen, it's not a fight between the Houthis who are Zaydi Shias and the others. In fact, it's a very mixed situation. There are a number of Sunni tribes that are aligned with the Houthis. They have no problem. Yeah, they have absolutely no problem. In fact, when the Houthis first took control of Sana'a in September of 2014, a number of tribes, Sunni tribes, came forward to congratulate them and thank them for restoring peace and law and order in the city. Mm-hmm. So it is not a sectarian war at all. Unfortunately, this is being misinterpreted. And I also want to emphasize that Iran has provided no military aid to the Houthis. All of the Houthis' weapons have come from the Yemeni army because the Yemeni army is split right down the middle. There are some, forces that are aligned with the Houthis. There are others that are opposed to them. But all of the weapons that the Houthis use are completely obtained from their own military forces. Nothing has come from outside. And no Iranian forces are involved. Iran has openly admitted and said that we are providing them political and moral support, and we would like to send them humanitarian aid. But we haven't provided them any military support. We are not militarily involved. And in fact, Iran has repeatedly called that the crisis in Yemen should be resolved through all of the people of Yemen. And no, there should be no outside interference. Mm-hmm. So they're even saying that even if there are, let's say, Salafi-type groups, but Iran recognizes that they're part of Yemen, they should be included in the political setup. And the people of Yemen should decide their future, not Saudi Arabia, not Washington, not Paris, not London, or Tel Aviv.
I like that position. Zafar, thank you very, very much. Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Again, we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Phil. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. That's Zafar Bengash.